So our agenda for today is to segue from our sugya into Hanukkah, and then discuss that a little bit today and tomorrow, but different points of focus. Our Gemara has a statement which is a little hard to understand, and the topic of some discussion a little bit in Rishonim and other sources concerning Tuach Nefesh. And we know that the general rule is that Kol HaMitzvah Shel Torah Yavar V'Al Yeharid. That for the most part, all of the mitzvahs of the Torah, if one is threatened with death, so you're supposed to violate the mitzvah rather than die. With, of course, the three exceptions, which we say the opposite, Yeharid V'Al Yavar. So if it's a question of murder, or Gilei Arayos, or Avodah Zarah, so then you're supposed to put up a fight and be Moser Nefesh if necessary, but for all the other mitzvahs in the Torah, one is supposed to violate if threatened with death. So presumably that includes Gezel, right? That includes theft. We have no source explicitly, as far as we know yet, that tells us that this is one of the big three, especially because then that would make it the big four, or more than three. So where does Gezel come in? Presumably nowhere. So the problem is that our Gemara at least seems to have one opinion. Maybe it's not the Maskana, maybe it's not the opinion at all, but if you saw our Gemara and you saw the Ra'ah that's quoted in the Shita Mekubetzes, right, that much of people saw, that the opinion of Reb Meir, maybe the Gemara goes back and forth about Reb Meir's opinion in terms of if you have a situation where witnesses come and they say that, yes, we signed the shtar, but we did not do so willingly. The shtar is essentially false because the fact that we signed it doesn't mean anything because we were forced. So Reb Meir says, in that situation, we don't believe them now and we leave the shtar as it is, even though they say they were forced. So why? So we've been discussing in the past few days that if they say they were forced, so we'll say, what do you mean you're forced? You shouldn't do it anyway. If they were pressured, let's say there was some kind of monetary pressure, so that's not a good enough excuse. Essentially, you're causing someone to get robbed here. You're signing a false, let's assume it's a false shtar that's going to claim somebody borrowed money when he didn't. So you're basically facilitating gezel. So the fact that somebody pressures you monetarily, that's no heter to do that. So if it's anusim hayinu machmas mamon, so who cares? Still, you're basically establishing yourself as an avarian here. You're making yourself into the bad guy. And the rule is, ein adam meis ma'atzmo rasha. So as we've seen the past few days, we're not going to accept that testimony. But what if you mean you were pressured at gunpoint? The guy said he was going to kill you. So then, presumably, you should do it. But the Gemara entertains the possibility that Reb Meir's view is that even at gunpoint, you still shouldn't do it. So is this a real shita b'halacha? Does this really exist? So it's a question. Reb Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, it's the other day, in Chelek Aleph, I think it's Reishchol Beis, around there, where Reb Moshe denies that there is any such shita like this. But it seems like there's at least something to figure out, that maybe if we look at Reb Meir here in our Gemara and the Ra'ah, and there's the sugya in Bava Kama also, you got a chance to see the sugya in Bava Kama a little bit this morning, right, that at least seems to consider the question. You have to figure out the whole back and forth in the Gemara, but maybe we would say, Aser lahatzil atzmo b'mamon chaveru, that one is not permitted to save his own life at the expense of someone else's money. In other words, stealing to save one's own life, maybe that's not permitted. This is the famous Heinz dilemma, right? The question, the ethical dilemma about somebody who has to break into the pharmacy to steal a medicine to save his dying wife. So one would think, okay, it's Yavor, Vali, Hare, this is not one of the big three. But the truth is, there seems to be a little bit of complexity about it. That Gemara in Bava Kama raises this issue. There's a Rashi over there. If you saw the Rashi, it seems to be interpreting at least one possibility of the Gemara as saying that even with the intent to pay it back later, maybe you can't be mafsid somebody else's property. in order to save your life. And this was a discussion also in the Achronim. Most prominently, the Binyan Sion. Binyan Sion was Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, who was the Rebbe of Shem Shem Fall Hirsch. So in his Shuvas, he discusses this possibility that he thinks that we do have to treat Gezel as Yehar Yavor. And this has major ramifications both for organ transplants and for capitalism. Because we kind of figure out how that comes into anything. So the issue is that when it comes to organ transplants is one of the most contentious topics, la halacha, nowadays. But the reason, for the most part, that it's so intense is because of the brain death question. If you want to take an organ from a vital organ like a heart or lungs from somebody on the premise that the person is dead and they're not killing them by taking out their heart, so you have to accept that what we call brain death is called death in order to do that, and that's a highly contentious subject, l'halacha. But separately from that, there are other halachic questions which are much less contentious. So the poskim who object to accepting brain death as the standard, but they acknowledge that the other halachic issues, pikuach nefesh, will trump. So normally you shouldn't be allowed to take an organ out of a dead body, because that's an iser called nivul hameis, or hanam min hameis. You're not allowed to benefit from a dead body, you're not allowed to cut up a dead body. That's why normally we prohibit autopsies in the absence of great need. So if that's the case, so you shouldn't be allowed to perform an organ transplant either, even if you don't have a brain death issue to consider. So that the post can assume that this is a straight lav, it's a straight Torah prohibition to benefit from the dead body. So pikuach nefesh should overcome it. So if it's going to save someone's life to take the organ out of the dead body, then it should be permitted. So that's the view of almost all poskim. However, the Binyan Sion, the Yaakov Ettlinger, says based on the Gemara of Bava Kamma that he thinks that it's actually not permitted, because even for pikuach nefesh, because he's talking pre-organ transplants, we're saying in general that even whatever pikuach nefesh consideration you may have to take something from a dead body, it's not going to be permitted, because he understands the iser as being a form of gezel, that you're stealing from the deceased, and that gezel is not justified for pikuach nefesh purposes. He does feel, though, that there's another approach that the individual can, during his lifetime, give permission for, because he thinks it's about gezel, so the person before he dies theoretically could authorize it to happen after he dies. But absent that, it's an issue of gezel, which he considers to be not permitted, even makom pikuach nefesh. And again, later generations, the poskim don't follow that approach. The poskim assume that issue can be overcome by pikuach nefesh. It's only brain death that's a thornier issue, because then you're talking about ritzicha. So ritzicha is one of the big three. But Hanam and Ameis and Nivul and Ameis, that the assumption is that Pikuach Nefesh trumps. The exception among later poskim is the Dvar Yehoshua. I think we've mentioned him in other contexts. Yeshua Menachem Ehrenberg, Dayan from Tel Aviv, so he has a tshuva where he agrees with Binyan Sion. He says, I know I'm in the minority here, but I think this is right, and that you can't allow this even for Pikuach Nefesh purposes. So just to mention one more point, I'll take your question. So this comes up also for the question of cannibalism. That there was a long tshuva about this in the Libel Drum, that the question is cannibalism normally is not recommended. But let's say a person, Rahman al-Islam, is in a plane crash, something like that, and the only way to sustain themselves is through taking parts of dead bodies. So obviously it's a horrific type of scenario. But should we say that it shouldn't happen even for purposes of pikuach nefesh? So the Leiv Avram, Avram Weinfeld, has a whole tshuva about this, where he says against the Binyan Sion, that even though somebody like the Binyan Sion would say that it's also to do this even when walking pikuach nefesh, because it's a gazel and a mace, but that's not the way we assume lahalah. So just to recap, what we've seen so far is that we would have thought, and maybe we still think, and Rav Moshe Feinstein for sure asserts that we still think that gezel is mutter b'mokom pikuach nefesh, that we say that kol mitzvah shevetor yavor v'al yehoreg, except for the big three, and it's only those three, And there is, at the same time, what seems to be a minority view that, which may be a minority view in the Gemara, then maybe a minority view in the Rishonim, and then maybe even a minority view in the Achronim, that for some reason Gezel is not subject to this rule of Yavar V'Al Yehareg, and it's not Mutter V'Makom Pikuach Nefesh. Again, Moshe Feinstein, right, he doesn't think this is even something to consider, but it seems like, at least theoretically, the opinion is out there. Are you?
For the Binyan Tzion, would you say that an organ donor card would be enough of a permission?
He probably would. And he's writing before this, but he is the one who has others, may you know, say that has other considerations. But he's saying that for this purpose, that the person during his lifetime could give a shus, which I assume an organ donor card would be in that category. Hi.
What's the commonality between the big three, besides mm-hmm. that they're all big, mm-hmm. that causes the minority opinions to also want to include stealing?
Oh, so that's going to be my next question. So essentially, how do you address both those things? That's the question I was going to throw out to you guys. So if this opinion exists, right, that if the opinion is really there, the Rav Moshe Feinstein notwithstanding, I mean, Rav Moshe writes in his Tshuva that you have to figure out Rashi from the comments, but for the most part, Rav Moshe feels the opinion is not an opinion. But to the extent that the opinion exists, so that's what I want to ask you. So you have to address two questions now. One question is, why should it be? If the rule normally is, all the other mitzvot in the Torah is a policy of Yavar V'Al Yehareg, so why should Gezel now be an exception? And if it is an exception, so why was it not mentioned in the three? So we have a Gemara that says there's three exceptions. Why is Gezel not on this list? And why should Gezel be an exception on its own? Your assumption being that there's some factor about the big three that puts them in the special list. So how does Gezel enter such company? That's what I'd like to hear you guys address a little bit.
So, one time I learned, telling somebody, right, mm-hmm. where there's more than one form of that. You could do it through, like you were seeing last week, Adam, through embarrassing somebody.
Right.
You could do it through steal. And if you steal somebody's, all their assets,
right,
then it's almost as if you feel like it's considered the same, it's considered in the same category.
Right, so that's Alifaz like thinking. Alifaz did that, right?
Right, exactly.
Right, so we don't.
I'm going to think of the names.
Right, so we don't generally look up to Alifaz. Chaim Shmulevitz has a whole rush about how Alifaz represents a very messed up way of thinking. Not that I mean that, but even if it were true, which we don't actually go that far, it's interesting because there are statements in the Gemara that someone chashuk kameis, someone else chashuk kameis. So it happens to be that each time there is a halakhic discussion about how far you go with that. So to say ani chashuk kameis, somebody's totally without any resources, is he considered to be comparable to a dead person? That has nafkamina as a halacha, because let's say a person is looking at a situation of being deprived of literally all of his assets. So is that justification for Chilul Shabbos? There's a Magen Avraham about this. There is such a discussion. Well, let's say somebody, the Gemara says that sumo chashuv kameis, a person is blind, is considered to be like dead. So that's a very important practical question, the question of whether you can be Mechal Shabbos to protect your eyesight, which is a big discussion in Poskim. So there is what to be said about that, but even if you want to go that far, which practically is a question, but that's not what we're talking about here, right? We're not talking about somebody necessarily being deprived. We don't see any indication either from our studio or from Bava Kamma or from the cases that the BNC was talking about. You're talking about all of somebody's assets. Right? So it sounds like, there's also a statement in the Gemara that whoever is no-till or proof from somebody's evil or will not show. Again, it depends on how far you want to go with the statements. It doesn't seem, it's certainly a valid attempt, but it's unlikely that that's really what's going on. So what is what's going on here? Where exactly does Gezel enter? You have to answer again two questions. Why should Gezel be Yehari Vayavor? And how could it be that it's Yehari Vayavor and the Gemara for some reason lists the Yehari Vayavors and doesn't list it?
I mean, maybe you could say that Gezel is really the broad category that all three fit into, and those are just examples or major examples of Gezel. So, I mean, we saw this when it had to do with what a chacham can lie about.
Right. Shalom.
And also suggests that it could be that they all fit into the category of shalom. That's why it's not mentioned as one of the things that someone can lie about. So
that would be a pretty big stretch also.
Right. So, I mean, it does
sound like... I mean, you could actually... it's interesting, you know, you have to get very hashkafic and thematic about it. You know, you could make a case that all three of those are forms of Gezel, especially if, like, Yuli Arayis, Minatius Ish, which is not the only category, but, you know, you'd have to twist around a little bit. But
then once you do that, you can just include other mitzvahs.
Right. So
why not just say the one category?
It's hard.
Why would you say three categories?
Right. This is a very slippery slope. Right. Because you have to redefine all. I mean, it's an interesting drasha, right? But you could do it almost. You could almost find a way to call all those three a type of gezel. Certainly, if you want to focus on Ishus Ish as the only category of erva, you could say Avodah Zarah is, you know, gezel from God's domain. And you certainly could say that it happens to be Rav Asher Weiss has an essay where he says that killing somebody also has a lot to do with Gezel, who's stealing their place in the world.
Their right to live.
Right, you know, you could make a case of all of these that you want to stuff them into a Gezel category. But it's a little bit of a stretch. So I'll give you a clue before taking a little bit of detour. All right?
Can you just say, like, we could tie in maybe just shows a total disregard, Ben Adam Chavero. Again, those are the biggest, like, and these are the best examples of
that. So the big three are all Ben Adam Chavero?
I mean, except for one. And you could just tie them in another.
How are the two of them? I mean, you're pursuing an interesting path, but it may end up going in the opposite way. But explain it a little bit more. How is Ben Adam Chavero? Two of them?
So the killing?
Okay, maybe. We'll see, that might be a little bit arguable, but maybe. That's one.
And then the
Gilirayas, is it on the Mochadero? Not necessarily. I mean, you're talking about probably two consenting.
On the simple level?
I mean, again, maybe if we're back at Ishish, is the only example, maybe you're saying that's the Ben on the Mochadero against the husband. But it's not necessarily. You know, could just be two consenting adults that aren't married to anyone else. So it's not really clear that that's a Ben Adam Chavero. But it's an issue. Keep that thought in mind, because we'll come back to it. So before taking a detour now into Hanukkah and coming back to this, so I'll leave you with just one clue, and then we'll detour and come back, that the approach that many of you have been taking, which is an understandable approach, to try to figure out why it's not on the list. So the assumption that somehow it is hidden in the list, either it's the whole list or it's a part of the list, but it's somehow in the list, is one possible approach to take. But you could also say that maybe the list is somehow different, that maybe it's a different kind of list. And therefore, maybe it's not on this list, but it could be on a different list. So with that thought in mind, let's talk about Hanukkah for a minute. I'm trying to figure out how much time we have, so normally we end at 12 on Tuesdays, but theoretically, if people aren't running, we could go a little bit later at that minute, because it's 12:20.
There's a class in
here
at 12:15.
So that's not going to work. Okay, that wasn't for work anyway, but worth asking. Okay, so in any event, let's talk about Hanukkah for a second. So, if you saw the Ma'amar Kamos, so what halacha did you see about Hanukkah? My mitzvah is Hanukkah chaviv v'hiyad ma'od, and Hanukkah is a very intense, beloved mitzvah, and you have to make sure you fulfill this mitzvah. So says the Rambam in Hilchos Hanukkah that it's so important that even if fulfilling the mitzvah of Hanukkah requires you to be shol al psachim, u'mocher es k'suso, that you have to go begging, you have to knock on the doors in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Hanukkah, you have to do it anyway. Now you saw that, Rambam? So, is that what you'd expect, or is that surprising in any way?
Surprising.
What's surprising about it? Okay, it's Drabbanan, so that's certainly part of the surprise. And combine that with what other fact? Are
you? You know that you don't have to spend more than a fifth of your funds.
Right, so normally the rule is you don't have to spend more than a fifth of your money on mitzvahs. So if it's tefillin, let's say, and you can't afford tefillin, it's going to cost more than a fifth of your money, so you're exempt. It's not a Gemara, it's a Sukkah and Kesubis, it's our Masechta. The Gemara doesn't say that explicitly. The Gemara says it's just, so you know, Gemara Daf Nun says it about Stucker. The Gemara says, in Kesubis Daf Nun, Hamba Vazvez, Al Yavazvez, Yosem Komesh, that a person is not really permitted, in a sense, to spend more than a fifth of his money on Stucker. Maybe we'll see the Sukkah a little bit next semester, actually. We'll spend some time on this. And the Ramah, Hilchos Lulav, the Ramah applies this to mitzvot in general. That positive mitzvot, one's not obligated to spend more than a fifth of his money. So if it was tefillin, you wouldn't have to. And yet, when it comes to Hanukkah, as Sammy points out, this is the Rabbanan, and yet, here you have to go crazy, you gotta do whatever you can in order to fulfill this mitzvah. So how do you explain that? Why should Neir's Chanukah have this stringency to it? So if you look at the Magid Mishnah on the side of the Rambam, so the Magid Mishnah tells you, well, there's a special category that we're dealing with here. Right, what's that category called? Pirsumei Nisa. Right, the mitzvos which are there in order to publicize a miracle. Those mitzvos, that you have to really go to a great effort in order to fulfill. How do you know that? It's the Mishnah of Pesachim. The first Mishnah, the 10th parak of Pesachim, and the Pesachim test in the days. So the Mishnah says, Afilu ani halokeach mehatamchoi, that even if you are getting all of your food from the soup kitchen, lo yifchos lo midal koso shoyani, you still should not taste less than you need for 4 cups of wine. So it sounds like from there that the 4 cups of wine, even if you're somebody who can't afford anything, and you're taking from Stakka, you have to ask for Stakka also for this purpose, which is the basis of the famous story about the Beis Halevi, which they teach you in rabbi school, that a woman came to the Beis Halevi, the original Beshever Salvechik, and asked him a question. She said that she can't afford wine for the Seder. So instead of wine, she's wondering, could she have 4 cups of milk? So the Beis Halevi said, no, you have to have wine, and you should take it from Stakka, like the Mishnah says, so I'll give you Stakka. So he reached into his wallet, and he gave her money for wine, but the students noticed that the money that he gave her was much more than the cost of wine. So they asked him, Rabbi, what's going on? So he said, this is why they teach the story in rabbi school, you have to be able to see the question behind the question. Right? She's asking about dalakosos. But if she's considering using milk, so it's not just wine she can't afford, right? What else can she afford? She can't afford meat. She's having a par of Seder. So clearly she has greater needs, so he saw the question behind the question and gave her more money. But the whole story is premised on this Mishnah that for dalakosos, you have to go begging. So the Gemara later on in the parak says, that's because of Pirsumei Nisa. So it says the Magid Mishnah, that's what's going on here also. Chanukah is about Pirsumei Nisa. So Chanukah, dalakosos, you have to go begging. So the thing is, that's great, but that doesn't really answer the question. It just recategorizes it. But the question is still the same. We didn't answer it. We just gave it a name. So we had a question a second ago. Chanukah is Rabbanan. Why should you have to go to such lengths? So we said, well, it's called Pirsumei Nisa, and it's the same thing as dalakosos. So those Rabbanans require you to go above and beyond. But it doesn't explain why. So you still have to answer the question, why should it have such intensity when it is a drabana? And to add to the question, just mentioned, the Gemara in the beginning of the Sefer Megillah on Daf Gimel, if you had a chance to see that, it was also on the course this morning, if anyone got that far. But the Gemara has a ruling that Mevat Min Avoda Mishan Mikra Megillah. that Mikra Megillah is so important that you're mevakel the avodah for it. So the Rishonim say, what does that mean, you're mevakel the avodah? So does it mean that if you have a choice, you only have enough time to either do the avodah, the Beis HaMikdash, or to read Megillah, that you should read Megillah? So a lot of Rishonim say, how could that be? Megillah is Drabbanan, and the avodah, the Beis HaMikdash, is Daraisa. So how could it be that that's going to be the trade-off? So a lot of Rishonim say it can't be that. It must mean that you do Megillah first, and then you do the avodah, and since you normally do the avodah first thing in the morning, so we'll call that Ravachan, even though it's not really bittul. That's how some of the Rishonim say. But there is a view in the Rishonim that it means exactly that. That if you have to choose either Megillah or the avodah, you'll do Megillah. You'll do the mitzvah Rabbanan instead of the Dereis. So how do you explain that? Okay, again, Persumah Nisa. But why should Persumah Nisa mean that you do a Rabbanan instead of a Dereis? So there are a few approaches to the question regarding, let's say, the question of Ner Chanukah and Persumah Nisa. So Rav Soloveitchik suggested, Rav Shechter often quotes from Rav Soloveitchik, that the whole point of Persumah Nisa, why do you do Persumah Nisa in the first place? Why is it that you advertise a miracle? So the Rav suggested the purpose is that you advertise a miracle so that you can express your desire for more miracles. That really it's a type of tefillah. You're saying, God, you've brought us miracles in the past. We like that. We're into that plan. Please send us more miracles. So if that's the case, maybe it's a little bit incongruous for you to be saying that, God, I want you to go outside of your budget, so to speak. Normally, God runs the world, I'll be derech ha-teva. And now we're saying that in order to make that point that we want more miracles, we've allotted exactly 19.9% of our budget. It's a little bit incongruous. It doesn't really send a great message. But that doesn't really help us understand the Megillah issue so much. Okay, so we want to make a great effort, but why should we prioritize Megillah over a mitzvah d'oraisa? It's a little bit hard to understand. So there's another approach. And that's the approach of the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer in his Shuv, this is Achach already, in Siman Tav Kuf Aleph, says as follows. Is there is a Yisod that the Achronim have, he didn't say it all like this, but this is consistent with it, that there is a principle that the Achronim, many Achronim have. The idea that if something costs too much, you don't have to do it. How does that principle work? What's that about? So you could say, like in the case, that this is an issue of ones, right? That we know we have a principle, ones, Rahman and Patre, that God lets you off the hook for things that you can't do. If it's impossible, you're excused. So says the Abinazer, that's true here also. If a mitzvah costs too much, you can't afford it, then you're off the hook. Says the Avnei Nezer, that principle only works when it's a principle between man and God. That God can read your mind. God knows what you're trying to do. So if you want to do a mitzvah, but it's physically impossible, so then God says, okay, you're pater, I know you tried. However, that doesn't work for bin adam l'chaveris. If you're dealing with a human being is starving, he needs some help, he needs some food, or he's going to collapse. So if you have a good excuse why you're not giving him the food, you're involved in another mitzvah, whatever it is, so that's great, he's still going to collapse. Because he can't read your intent and say, okay, it's the intent that counts. Only God can credit your intent. So principles like onus rachmana patre, that only works between man and God. It doesn't work between man and man. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz made this point.
He said, if you stick your hand in the oven and you mean well, when you take it out, it's still burnt. It's not going to be any less burnt because you had good intentions.
So the whole idea of good intentions only works between you and God, doesn't work between you and other people.
Yes, sir. Right. If you're giving tzedakah, then that's between people.
Right.
So you have to give tzedakah. You can't say, I'm involved in another mitzvah, therefore I'm part of it, because it's not going to help him. He's still going to collapse.
So you don't have to give more than a fifth.
Right. So that's because your capacity to give tzedakah is limited. But in general, to say, well, he should be okay because my intent is there, that's not going to help him. So a lot of Achronim have this yisod. A lot of Achronim say, in different contexts, that certain principles that we have of prioritization only work between man and God. But between man and man, it's not going to work. So we say, for example, Asedo Chalosa said, right? You have a clash between a positive mitzvah and a negative mitzvah, so we prioritize the positive mitzvah. So some Achronim say that that only works if both mitzvos are ben adam l'makom. If one of the mitzvos is ben adam l'chaveru, then you have to prioritize that mitzvah because God can credit you for the mitzvah you're not doing, but the human being can't. So some say that by asei dochalosa say. Some say that by osek b'mitzvah patam in a mitzvah, the whole idea if you're involved in one mitzvah, you're exempt from a different one. So there are some who say that's only true if the other mitzvah that comes up is between man and God. So God can say, it's all right, you're busy with my first mitzvah, I excuse you from the second one. But human beings don't have that ability. They need their help right now. So there are those who maintain that osek b'mitzvah, all these types of ideas that basically tell you how to prioritize, are all based on the assumption that God can credit you for what you're not able to do, even though you want to do it. So many point out that's only true if it's between you and God. But between you and somebody else, that's not true. Okay, so far so good? Everyone with me? So within that type of thinking, there are those who say that's pshat on Reb Meir and Ksubis and Daf Yutes. That what does it mean when it says all the mitzvahs in the Torah, Yavor v'Al Yehareg? So God is in control of all the mitzvahs. God is the one who asks you to do the mitzvahs. He is the one who can release you from the mitzvahs. So God can say, I asked you to fast on Yom Kippur, I asked you to do Shabbos, but if your life is at risk, I'll tell you it's okay. You don't have to keep Shabbos. It's okay, you don't have to fast on Yom Kippur today. That's all if it's about between you and God. But if it's between you and somebody else, if you're stealing somebody else's property, so God can say it's okay, but what about the victim? The victim is still being robbed. So maybe you don't have permission to save your life at the expense of somebody else. And yes, as far as halacha is concerned, so yeah, yavor v'al yehareg. But the owner of the property still might be mocked on his property.
Well, why would I limit that to stealing? That's anything that has to do with your property.
It might be. It might be that essentially the whole area of Benotam Machavero might be in a different category. And this is really just a more prominent example, which is why I'm saying it's kind of the opposite of what you were saying before, that maybe the big three that are listed, really, those are all Benotam Lamakum. Even murder is to a certain extent Benotam Lamakum, because we know murder is prohibited even if the party wants it. Even if it's suicide, euthanasia, you still have a prohibition of murder, because murder is maybe more, not just about Benotam Machavero, but it's about denying the Tzelem Elokim. So it could be that the Gemara that lists the big three, those are all Ben Adam L'makom. But Ben Adam L'chavero might have another set of rules. Again, practically speaking, we're not advocating this, but conceptually, maybe there's some truth to that.
So why do we then just limit it to Gzelem?
Maybe we don't. Maybe it's a way to represent all of those types of another Machaveros that are about the other person's rights. He has rights, and at any time he is makbid, which are all, so that tactic, you know, all could be subsumed under gazelle. So then maybe that's all in that category.
So three turns into like 200.
Well, not 200. There aren't that many. You know, there aren't that many principles that would be in that heading. But maybe, yeah, whatever said is contained within gazelle might be subject to that rule. Again, practically speaking, we don't probably follow that. But conceptually, maybe that's what it's about. And so the Gemara in Bava Kamma, which talks about the Lahas Lassimum Chavero, so there's two possible readings of that, but they could both be consistent with this. Right? Either we could say that it's about saying you can't even do it in the first place. You can't save your life at the expense of somebody else's property, because even if God's okay with it, the other guy's not. Or you could say that yes, you should do it, you should steal somebody else's stuff to save your life, but you're still obligated to pay them back. You're still obligated afterwards to fix it, because essentially, when it comes to Chilul Shabbos and Kippur, there's no point in doing tshuva for eating on Yom Kippur to save your life, because God said it's okay, so it's not even an Aveiro. But it could be that when it's Benazim Machaveiro, it is an offense against this guy, because he never waived his rights not to be robbed. It's still the better decision. You should commit this offense against that guy rather than dying. But afterwards, you'll have to pay him back, because he never suspended the prohibition. So if you take this principle and you apply it here, says the Avnei Nezer, that could explain why in Eretz Hanukkah we have to go to such an extent. Now, in Eretz Hanukkah, that's a Benazim Machaveiro? No, but it has something in common with it. That Pirsumei Nisa is about communicating with other people. So even though it's really a mitzvah b'nodav l'makom, but the nature of the mitzvah is to communicate to others. So it could be that since that's what's going on, you can't rely on any excuses. It has to actually happen. And if it doesn't happen, there's something fundamentally missing. You can imagine if somebody says, okay, I can't light Hanukkah candles, so I can't afford it. So somebody will walk past your window and they'll say, well, I don't see any menorah in the window, but I assume he wanted to put a menorah there, but he couldn't afford it, so I'll tell myself about the menorah. And it doesn't work. I mean, presumably, you have to actually fulfill the mitzvah in order for it to take place. Says the Avnei Nezer, maybe that shot in why this mitzvah takes such priority. And then you could also say that's the shot in the opinion in Mar Megillah that says that you should read Megillah instead of the Kurbanos. That yes, Kurbanos are Daraisa, Megillah's Rabbana. But the Kurbanos, God could say, all right, I know you want to read the Kurbanos, I credit you as if it happened. But Megillah, it's about communication. So that has to actually take place. So that's the understanding. The priority is not because it's more important. It's because it's more urgent. In the time management literature, they distinguish between urgency and importance. So Talmud Torah is important. It's not always urgent. Or doesn't always present itself as an emergency. While a ringing telephone may not be important, but it's urgent. Because if you don't answer it now, then it's not going to be there later. So there are different reasons why we prioritize something. So it could be that Mikra Megillah is prioritized over the Karbanos, it's the Rabbanon, it's not more important, but it's more urgent because there's no way to make up for it if it doesn't happen. There are some other applications of this, and maybe we'll save that for tomorrow because we're over time, so I'll just wrap up because we'll let you go. But just to quickly review what we saw, so we saw that from our Gemara, and from some reading of our Gemara, and maybe the Ra'ah, and the Gemara in Bava Kamma, and Rashi over there, and the Binyan Siyam, there seems to be some minority view throughout from the Gemara from Shon Piyachronim that says that Gazel is Yehari Vayavo. Moshe Feinstein didn't think that was really the case. Certainly doesn't seem was the case, but there does seem to be at least such a possibility. We talked about the Binyan Siyam, about the organ transplants and the autopsies and cannibalism. That he wouldn't allow all those things, even welcome to Kuach Nefesh, because he feels it's about Gezel. So we discussed why should that be, and if why should it be Yehari Vayavor, and if so, why is it on the list? So we took a detour into Hilchos Chanukah, where we noted that the Rambam says that you have to do whatever it takes to fulfill Neres Chanukah, even if it means begging, which is clearly not the halacha of Aydin and Daraisa, like tefillin and the like. So why should that be? So we discussed one approach that it's tefillah, and therefore tefillah for Nisim, so you have to go to great lengths. But then we discussed the Avinash's approach, that essentially it's because of the difference between Ben Adam L'Chaveros and Ben Adam L'Makom. That Ben Adam L'Makom, God can credit your intentions, so we have the principle of onus rachmona patre, which means you don't have to spend too much money, which means that we can say if you're involved with another mitzvah, we credit you with both, etc., etc. But when dealing with people, you can't rely on that because people need actual results. So that could be why you have to have a dedication to fulfilling mitzvah of Hanukkah, because it's about communication. And that could also be pshat in our Gemara, that maybe Gezel is not between you and God, it's between you and the other person, so God can say, listen, as far as my mitzvahs are concerned, you're off the hook if your life is at stake. But as far as Gezel, maybe not. And then that could mean two things, either that you're not allowed to do it in the first place, or if you are allowed to do it, you still have to fix it afterwards by paying back the person. All of that could be ramifications of this. And then we use that principle also to explain why there is a view in Rishonim that Megillah should take priority over the Avodah, the Beis HaMikdash, because again, the Avodah, God can credit, while Megillah is about Rishonim, is about communication, and that doesn't actually happen, is impossible to credit any other way. All right, so we're over time, so we'll end there. Tomorrow we'll say a few more words about this, then we'll look at another subject about Hanukkah. I wish you have a wonderful day.